Let's get to the NBA. The Big Three back in action for Brooklyn last night for just the second time this season. This time it was in Chicago versus the Bulls, and it was a blowout, 138 to 112. Right now, the team prefers road games because it's the only time when Kyrie Irving can play due to New York City's vaccine mandate. However, there is another option on the table, and our Adrian Wojnarowski says there's now, quote, real optimism within the organization that Kyrie can become a full-time player.
Months evolve between now, you know, get through the All-Star break, you know, into the stretch run of the season and then toward the playoffs, you know, that enough in the world could change that Kyrie Irving could become a full-time player. Again, I think that's real optimism within that organization. Now, you know, very simply, if he got vaccinated, it changes it immediately. But short of that, you know, there's other avenues, including if at some point the Nets are willing to essentially pay a nightly fine, that's ultimately kind of nominal, to have him in the lineup, which would essentially violate the New York City mandate about unvaccinated players performing. The Nets aren't willing to go there now. They have an owner in Joe Tsai who's been very vocal about you know, the need for people to get vaccinated. And the idea, I think, right now of having an unvaccinated player and having the organization essentially paying a fine every night, there's not a stomach for it now.
Okay, Jay Williams and Monica McNutt back with us. And Jay, we talked about the fines at the beginning of the show. I mean, Adrian Wojnarowski calling them nominal. I mean, really, they are nominal. First offense is a warning. Second, $1,000 fine. Third, $2,000 fine. Fourth offense, $5,000. And really, that goes to infinity. So $5,000 would be the max there. So, Jay, would the Nets paying fines for Kyrie be a bad look, or you think it's cool?
I mean, I'm not going to say it's cool, but like what I am going to say is that one of the things Woj said, Monica, towards the back end of that is that the Nets may not have a stomach for it now. Operative word, now.
Yeah.
Where are we now? We are in January. We have not even hit an All-Star break yet. But if we get past that point and nothing still has changed, it might be something they could consider. I think they should consider it. And here's what I'm really going to say to a lot of people out there, because I see things all over social media. Well, you're breaking the rules. You're breaking the laws that are in place. Okay, well, there's a fine system that's set up. So I ask, like, people say, well, New York's all about health and safety protocol. All right, so you get a slap on the wrist for your first time violating that? That's really trying to do everything for the health and safety of people around? Or you get a $1,000 fine for the second time, Monica? That's really trying to help people with the health and safety? This is about money, too, right? And it's something that's put in place to help businesses that all fight for it. Let's not try to act like, hey, we're really trying to, if they really want to stop it, you know what? We're going to ask you to get out of business. But they're never going to do that because the billions of dollars that the Nets organization and other Fortune 500, 100 companies bring to the city of New York. So it is feasible to think that way. And the last point, Monica, I have is I still find it outrageous that unvaccinated players, if you're asking about those fines, unvaccinated players can come to Brooklyn and play in their arena, and you're not as worried about the health and safety protocol of players and fans, but you are with the players that just live here. And I think that's BS.
Well, Jay, we know cash rules everything around us, so there's that. I don't necessarily think that visiting players being able to play is BS, because the idea behind this is that residents, people that do their daily existence in the city of New York, would comply with the vaccination status. Here's where I am. I'm almost indifferent. If Joe Tsai decided this is where I hold the line, I'm not willing to pay an additional fee for my player that doesn't want to be vaccinated, I would understand that. However, if he decided, to your point, we have gotten to the playoffs and whatever the playoff number is, I am going to pay that because of the ability of this group to reach out and touch, literally, a championship in the NBA, I understand that as well. I think as we proceed through this thing, again, the area I do have to give Kyrie his credit is he has never attempted to mislead us. And if he proceeds with whatever the deemed protocol will be for an unvaccinated player, then I'm not sure that we have much to say. And the reality of it is, while I think this is a powerful moment in terms of the Brooklyn Nets holding the line, which I have said on this show a number of times, the reality is that our sports figures, sports organizations are not necessarily the end-all be-all when it comes to the moral conscience, or I don't know if you want to use the word moral when it comes to the vaccination, the belief in science or not, in our society. And so we're going to keep watching this. I think we know how talented Kyrie is, and this team is scary, with him. They're not bad at all without him. And this is just going to continue to evolve. I do think that ultimately winning will trump all, so it doesn't surprise me if it goes this way that he will be able to play and they'll just pay the fine.
But, Monica, I want to go back to what you said originally about how you didn't think it was BS. So the places in which all the protocols are in place, right, in order for an unvaccinated player to come into Brooklyn and play, those will be the same protocols that you will use for Kyrie on a consistent basis. So that's where I get – so you're saying it's safe for unvaccinated players to come in and play because they're abiding by the protocols that the NBA has in place to keep players safe. But you're saying those same protocols that you could not establish at home to keep players safe wouldn't count? It's not going to give you the same safety? That's where it's confusing to hear how certain cities, especially for programs or businesses like the league who have all these protocols in place for safety, can't understand that.
Well, I think the nuance, though, Jay, is like this isn't an NBA thing. This is a New York thing.
I understand. Yeah. It's a Chicago thing. It's an L.A. thing. But it's not the majority of states.
Right. No, and listen, I agree with you. And you look at cities like New York and L.A. Well, I agree with you in terms of it being slightly confusing. But you look at cities like New York and L.A. or the Bay Area that wanted to be leaders, I guess, in mandating vaccinations in terms of big business. This stuff gets in the weeds, Jay, and you and I both have now had COVID and dealt with it. I am not, and I the word indifferent is probably not the best word. But I understand the layers in this conversation. I do not take issue with the mandates in New York. And if Josiah, again, decides, all right, here we are, I'm going to pay the fine, as long as Kyrie is proceeding under those protocols that we just talked about, here we are.
Politics as usual.
I mean, personally, we all have friends and family that are not necessarily vaxxed, and we're dealing with that, too. So this is just an extension of that.
Yeah. Well, look, the Nets already bent once. Who's to say that they more than likely won't bend twice? Mm-hmm. Okay, so from New York to Boston, Monica, last block, Jay said he doesn't think the Celtics should break up their young duo of Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum. So do you agree with this?
So it's not that Jay just said he doesn't think that should be broken up. Jay said, I don't know what these people are talking about. And that's where you lost me a little bit, because I'm with you, Jay, in that they are both talented. However, it is glaring that this Celtics organization is stuck in the mud. And yes, a win is a win, and getting both of those guys on the same page with big-time numbers are great, but this is an Indiana Pacers squad who admittedly was trying to blow it up. So I don't want to get carried away with that victory. I don't know that it is time, but to be considering that, Jay, I think we're there.
Why do you think we're there?
Because this Celtics team has higher expectations, and they have egregiously not met them in the past two seasons. And I think when I look at both of their games, and you said it yourself, will Jaylen Brown be willing to acquiesce? Their games are so similar. They're not guys, to me, who play exceptionally well off of the ball in terms of creating a two-man game between the two of them. They both want the basketball in their hands, and rightfully so. They're both very, very talented. There just doesn't seem to be a rhythm and flow to what the Celtics are doing consistently.
I mean, before they got hurt, Kawhi Leonard and Paul George seem like they can exist. You're talking about two wings who want the ball, two superstars who can learn how to play together. All I'm going to say, and I'm not comparing those two to Kawhi Leonard and Paul George. I'm using that
Please
as an
don't.
Analogy to explain, right? But all I'm saying is this organization has had a lot of upper management things that they've done. Obviously, Brad Stevens just going into the position of being a general manager. Ime Udoka now is the new head coach. There's been a lot of moving parts about, and all I would say is it's hard to find two stars that have the potential that these two do. I don't start by saying, hey, these two guys are the problem. Can they coexist? I start by saying, how can I build the right pieces around these two? Because these two could be the cornerstone of my franchise for the next 10 to 15 years.
So, and to that end, Jay, I think the solution, more importantly, would be a strong leader point guard that would put everybody in their right place. If you ask me how to fix it, that's the formula.
You get the ball when I tell you you get the ball because I have championship experience and I've been here. I understand how to be an extension of my coach on the floor.
Mm-hmm. Well, hopefully that's the beginning of a good stretch.
I wouldn't even necessarily need the championship experience. Yeah. I would say a guy like Jalen Brunson is a guy that I think would fix it. But go ahead. Yeah.
All right, I like it.
Brought to you by the Capital One Venture Card. Earn unlimited double miles on every purchase every day, and you can use those miles on any travel purchase. Plus, earn unlimited 5x miles on hotels and rental cars booked through Capital One Travel. Your next trip is closer than you think with the Venture Card from Capital One. Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com for details.
The Cowboys won the NFC East and now turn their attention to the wild card round as they take on the 49ers. Earlier in the season, Jerry Jones said he was shocked about his team's success, but now after 12 wins, his expectations are sky high. Here's Jerry.
Jerry, how do you define success once you make the play? Is it title or bust for you?
Unquestionably. There's no in between. You really go into it with the expectation of being in the playoffs. To get here, you need to have distinguished yourself, and then once you get here, all bets are off. And a lot of that has got to do with availability of your players. At that time, we're in good shape. We're in real good shape right now. And so, you know, we should be excited and be planning on it.
Okay, for Jerry, it is Super Bowl or bust. Now Marcus Spears here to join Dan Orlovsky to debate us the rest of the way. So, Marcus, the Cowboys have lost their playoff opener 7 of 11 times since they won the Super Bowl back in 1995. It has been quite a while. So are the Cowboys under the most pressure to advance this weekend?
Yeah, absolutely. You look at everything that's actually materialized over the time since Mike McCarthy got hired and also Dak getting his new deal. And you look at this particular situation with the Cowboys and where they are, where everybody expected them to be at this point of the season, or at least having an opportunity to get into the playoffs. So when you look at this team, the way that they played this year, and Mike McCarthy is my focus here, because I'll go back all the way to the opening press conference. This is exactly what he was brought here to do. This is at least what Jerry had in mind about signing a former Super Bowl winning caliber coach. So to lose in week one would be a disappointment about the process that started a couple years ago. It would be a disappointment of what abysmal season that this team had last year, albeit because of injuries and an unstable coaching situation on the defensive side of the football. So if you get a first round exit in this season, and I know the opponent is formidable. I know the 49ers are a really good football team, but this is about the Dallas Cowboys and their process and how they've done things over the past 2 years. You got your quarterback signed under a deal. You got the head coach mm-hmm. that you think is a Super Bowl caliber head coach. You drafted a guy that literally changed the face of your defense in Micah Parsons. So if they lose in the first round, all of those things will be called into question. But more importantly, is Mike McCarthy the guy for the job? So, yeah, they have the most pressure to get it done in week one.
No, the most pressure this week is the Los Angeles Rams. I want to make myself very clear. This is the biggest game of Matthew Stafford's career.
Facts.
And if he wins, next week will be the biggest game of his career. This is a legacy-changing 4 or 5 week stretch for Matthew Stafford. They have to get out of this round. We all know that they went all in this offseason, right? Mm-hmm. Traded Jared Goff, traded all the picks. They've obviously had a fantastic season. They win their division. The quarterback was in the MVP race, all of that. But all these moves were made to go win the Super Bowl, not to just win wild card weekend, but to win the Super Bowl. This is the biggest game of Matthew Stafford's career. This is the potential to go on a Hall of Fame run. Now, if we look at these rosters, I was just thinking about this, fella. Like, dude, the Rams got 7 first rounders out of their starting 22. 7. I think they got 6 guys that are top 15 picks. They got a defensive player of the year, an Aaron Donald, and an MVP candidate every single year. Jalen Ramsey is a defensive player of the year candidate basically every year. Odell Beckham, first round pick, one of the best ever. Matthew Stafford, a number one pick. Sony Michel, a first round pick. And Von Miller is a Super Bowl MVP. Like, the Cowboys have a lot of pressure. I get that. And Dak Prescott has a lot of pressure. But their arrow, I feel, as an organization, just being honest, is pointing up. You got to be very encouraged with where the Cowboys are heading organizationally for the future. It is win or bust for the Los Angeles Rams. They did not do all that stuff. Sean McVay did not put, you know, kind of his name on the line this offseason when he said, I got to go get Matthew Stafford. Like, this is a football team that was put together. They mortgaged the future. They do not care about the picks. There's a saying blank those picks. Like, they did not give all those picks up to have a dicey game and to not win the wild card weekend. I mean, there's no question there's pressure on the Cowboys. I don't even think it's close that the most pressure this weekend has to be on the Los Angeles Rams, has to be on Sean McVay, and it absolutely is on Matthew Stafford.
I see what you're saying. I mean, they did definitely trade the farm for Matthew Stafford, but I mean, if the Cowboys were to lose, I can't imagine anyone thinking that any part of their season was a success.
But here's what it goes back to for me, Marcus.
Go ahead, Dan.
In August, or back into August, September starts. If you had told Cowboys fans and everybody in the Cowboys, hey, you're going to win your division, you're going to win 12 games, Dak's going to be comeback player of the year, he's going to throw for almost 40 touchdowns, and you're going to host a playoff game, they'd be like, great. That is a successful season. That is exactly where we want to be trending. If you told the Los Angeles Rams that they lost wild card weekend, everybody would say what a massive disappointment that, because not only does it end this season, this team doesn't have really anything to build with moving forward. They got to win this weekend.
Mm-hmm. Dio, you're absolutely right about where you're coming from with the Rams. And I look at how the pressure has built over the course of a season. And you think about where they are. You know, I said this before the season started, that McVay was the head coach under the most pressure in the NFL. So I understand where you're coming from. But when I look at Dallas, I really think about and what I've respected, everybody, you know, talk about me being in my feelings. They have the more formidable opponent. And that's why I put the pressure on them to get out of week one. They have the team that everyone thinks and everyone sees the ability to dominate in games in which how they play. So I took a little football context in there as well. The opponent mattered to me. I don't think anybody in LA think that they're going to lose to the Arizona Cardinals. I know a lot of people think the Dallas Cowboys are going to lose to the San Francisco 49ers. So when I look at that particular situation, but overall arching, and I know this is a debate show and we're supposed to disagree, but when you put it in context about the Rams and what they've done, even years before getting Matthew Stafford, because remember, they gave away picks for Jalen Ramsey as well. They had a whole plan to get all of these things done. So overarching, yes, that's the team that the microscope has been on since they've made a couple of moves even before Matthew Stafford. And I understand where you're coming from. My thought process was everybody talking about the 49ers, what they do well, the Dallas Cowboys should lose this game because the 49ers play a certain brand of football, and I brought that into the equation with the opponent that the Dallas Cowboys have to play in week one.
You know who's another team that I think is right in the conversation is the Buffalo Bills. I mean, this was supposed to be their year. They had such a great year last year. New England's rebuilding. They took a first-round rookie quarterback who no one thinks can play, you know, and they've got really an MVP-caliber guy, and they won the division. Like, I think there's a ton of pressure on Buffalo also to win this weekend and kind of start getting, I don't want to say getting, you know, trend back towards that AFC championship-caliber football team. You know, with after paying Josh and again, New England kind of being down, like, could you imagine Buffalo losing this game at home against the New England Patriots
rookie
and everyone sitting back going, here comes 20 years of that again? Yeah. I do believe that there's a ton of pressure on the Bills as well.
I think that would be very unfortunate for them to lose, but I could definitely see it happening.
Ahead,
I'm just saying I for one, could see it happening. But, yes, it would be very disappointing for the Bills organization. Marcus?
Yeah. I think the pressure, though, and Dan is right on this answer. I think the pressure because of the overall construct of the Los Angeles Rams. They haven't abided by how you normally go after winning a Super Bowl, right? We talked about they done mortgaged the future. They done gave picks away. They have Hall of Fame players that they went and got in order to try to win a Super Bowl. And McVay was considered to be obviously boy wonder, play calling genius.
Right. Yeah.
He's already been to a Super Bowl as well with Jared Goff. So yeah, I gotta agree with Dan. I look at the Cowboys and I still think in the vein of actual pressure on the field and in the game, they have the toughest task. Mm-hmm. But overall arching, the construct and the way the Rams have operated outside of what we normally see as trying to win a Super Bowl, I 100% agree with Dan on that.
Think of it like this, Charlie and Marcus. Like, If Matthew wins this game, right, then he's got the chance, obviously, to play and get into the NFC title game. And he's very much so starts to change. He's never won a playoff game. Starts to change the narrative about himself. And then he becomes maybe into like the Philip Rivers type of conversation quarterback-wise. If he loses this game, and he's my boy, if he loses this game, you ain't running from the conversation of, like, you're Jeff George, essentially. Like, super talented, but never good enough, and you couldn't get your team over the hump. It's the biggest game of his career.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It's not just about the team. It's also the fact that Matthew Stafford has been in the league for 13 seasons and has never won a playoff game. So he is definitely ready to change that narrative.
Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
We head into the playoffs with a lot of exciting high-power offenses, including Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs, who finished the regular season winning 9 of 10. But do not sleep on the Cowboys, Rams, or even the Bengals with Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase. So, Marcus, let's start with you. Who do you think is the most dangerous offense in the playoffs?
All right, Charlie, before I answer this question, I got two orders of business to take care of. I totally forgot about this coming off when I started the show. One, I see in that highlight with the return of Stephen A, they got everybody else except me because I be giving them that smoke. So I understand when you taking L's
sure
all the time.
I'm sure you're going to get more of
you don't
want to
put the person on the highlight. And then the second thing is, Dan, you better run me my money because we had a bet and I don't want to bring it back on this show.
I didn't want to have this conversation. What's the bet? I haven't heard about this bet. Say it.
Did you make the bet or not?
Charlie asked you a question. He don't even know the bet, Charlie. The bet
was that the Dallas Cowboys would be a more explosive offense than the 49ers, I believe, or something like that.
Okay.
Yes.
Is that the right team, Dan?
Yes. You finally got the right team.
Is that the right team, Dan?
The 49ers didn't play backups.
Are we talking more explosive this weekend, right?
It was the last like 3 weeks of the season. Oh. I said the 49ers offense would perform better than the Cowboys. The Cowboys played against the Washington football team with backups and the Eagles with backups.
Here we go.
He wants me to pay him $100.
Give me the
excuses. You know what? This is tough.
Year,
yeah, I mean, you're bound to be explosive when you're playing the worst teams in the league, right?
Charlie.
What?
Charlie,
what, Marcus?
You better know you got a 21 before you make the damn bet. You better know you got good cards before you make the bet, right?
So I guess a bet is a bet.
Listen, how about you just give me the money?
Just let's not worry about it.
I'll take the money, the defense the Cowboys was playing.
You didn't know they were playing backups.
First of all, you better run me my money because right, when
your,
this Baker Mayfield thing
Venmo?
Happened last year, I sent
what's
you
your
on camera transaction.
I don't got
I can't tell
out.
The whole world. I
I'm
can't tell the whole
like
world.
Okay.
I can't tell the whole world. I can't tell the whole world.
Pay
I'll tell you on the show.
Man.
Let me get to the answer, Charlie. My bad. It's the Kansas City Chiefs for me. It's the Kansas City Chiefs. And really what it boils down to is beyond Mahomes that we've seen this offense operate more from a high power level. When we talked about them struggling at the beginning of the season and all of the turnovers that was happening and occurring, this team ripped off 8 wins. And I understand that when you get to this point, there's a pressure. There's a certain amount of pressure that gets brought up. Into this point, and we've seen the Chiefs thrive. I've seen the Chiefs with their backs against the wall this particular season have an attitude of coming out fighting and this offense kind of waking up and coming and looking a lot like we thought that they would look for the majority of the season. So based on that alone and what I've seen with them in these moments and understanding the gravity of these games, and look, they got the best quarterback, right? Patrick Mahomes is the best quarterback when it comes to bringing his team to a point where they look like a basketball team at certain points of the season. And I feel like when you get to the playoffs, with his experience, the things that we've seen him have the ability to do with a Tyreek, with a Travis Kelce, some other guys like Pringle emerging. They figured out a way to get Mecole Hardman some explosive plays. You think about this run game that they've implemented, the patience in play to allow themselves to be explosive. I think that's going to come to fruition for the Kansas City Chiefs offensively in particular, and that's why I got them being the best offense.
Can I say the Colts?
No.
No. No,
she
cannot.
Unfortunately.
Blessings, Charlie.
You know, I wish you could say it, but you can't, unfortunately.
That freaking laugh, man. I hate that laugh, and I love it at the same time. I'm going to say the Cincinnati Bengals. You know, I feel, you know, probably 2 months ago, I thought the Cincinnati Bengals had the best skill group in all of the AFC. When we look at guys like Ja'Marr Chase, who has become a guy that, get him the football, he can do something with it kind of big time after he catches it. One-on-one situations. I think Joe Mixon is an undervalued and underrated back when it comes to like the performance, because everyone thinks about the quarterback and the wide receiver. So the ability, we've talked about Bill Callahan, you know, his son Brian Callahan is the offensive coordinator for the Bengals, that outside stretch, outside zone run game, I think is a big part. Tyler Boyd is probably one of the best slots in all of football that, again, we don't talk about enough. T. Higgins and his ability to just kind of make some of those contested catches. I'm not even open the DeAndre Hopkins type of stuff because of his big frame. I just think that the amount of talent they have on their offense, skill-wise, is so special. Uzama, their tight end, is a good player as well. So it's just such a difficult offense to match up against. I know the offensive line is not very good. If you look at the team who led the NFL when it comes to touchdowns scored outside of 15 yards, it's the Cincinnati Bengals. If you look at the team who scored touchdowns in the NFL outside of 30 yards, it's the Cincinnati Bengals. I mean, they are the walking definition of dangerous because they have proven throughout the season that they can score from anywhere. They don't need to get in the red zone. So that's why I say it's the Bengals.
Well, we'll see how much pressure the Kansas City D is going to put on Joe Burrow, because he is third in QBR when he's not pressured, but then he goes to 20th in QBR when he is pressured. So that's a huge difference.
Charlie, you be hitting me, man.
You know, I got those facts. Okay, let's pivot from playoff teams to a team you know we will not be seeing in the playoffs. That would be the New York Giants. It was only a few weeks ago our Adam Schefter reported that ownership planned to stick with Coach Joe Judge and quarterback Daniel Jones. But since then, more bad Giants performances and pressure from fans forced them to make a change Tuesday. They fired Judge and now begin a search for both a new GM and also a head coach. So here's Giants co-owner John Mara on the Giants' woes.
He made two big changes this week, changes again. Why should Giants fans believe you will get it right this time?
Well, I haven't given him any reason to believe that, Bruce. It's up to me to make the right choices, up to Steve and I to make the right choices going forward to earn back their trust. And that is not going to be an overnight process. That's going to take some time, but it starts with getting the general manager pick done correctly, and then with hiring the right head coach. So that's going to be a process that we're going to have to earn their trust again. And as I said, that's not going to happen overnight.
Is this as embarrassed as you've been about the franchise?
Honestly, I would have to say yes. Yes, it is. I kept thinking during the season that we had hit rock bottom, and then each week it got a little worse.
Yeah, it's a big old mess. So, Dan, how do the Giants fix their mess now?
Yeah, they got to hit the trifecta. Don't go to sleep yet. I think, first of all, I'm super impressed with Mara's comments. This is a conversation and topic that I'm actually super stoked to talk about. You got to hit the trifecta. And Mr. Mara kind of referenced it. You got to hire the right general manager. And it's not only the general manager. Like, you got to hire the right general manager. And then he's got to hire all the right pieces around him within that front office. You know, like, Marcus knows this as well. We always talk about the Cowboys and Jerry Jones and Stephen Jones. And the name I've always heard that has done such a good job down there is William Clay, right? So, you know, they got to hire the right front office people. Mm-hmm. And then they got to hire the right head coach. And then they got to find the quarterback. Now, this is something that's not complicated. It's just very hard to do. You know, when I was with the Lions early on, so this is like 2005, we were terrible. And people used to always come up to me and say, like, Dan, why do the Lions stop? stink so much. And I would go, look at our first round draft picks over the last 10 years. They stink. We would have like one first round good first round pick and the rest of them stuck. And I'd say, look at the Ravens. Look at the Steelers. They would draft 10 first round picks over the course of 10 years and 8 of them would be really good players. The Giants have to build from the draft and do it well. And I know that's easier said than done, but it's not complicated. And the reality is this, it's hard to do. Like the last organization that I think of that was struggling the way the Giants have over the last decade or so, and then flipped it was the San Francisco 49ers, so to speak, with Coach Harbaugh and Trent Baalke. Like, they got a general manager that was good in Baalke at that time. And then he started to draft players like Dante Hittner and Deshaun Goldston and Colin Kaepernick. And they get Harbaugh.
Patrick Willis
and Navarro Bowman. And all those guys, they started hitting on their draft picks. And then they got a coach that was really, really good, that was great at quarterback development and great at offensive mindset and great at galvanizing their guys and organization and you know, a leader of men. And then they got a quarterback that was really, really good at that time, which was Colin Kaepernick. So, you know, that's how the Giants have to do this. Again, it's not a complicated process. You know, like, think about it with the Seahawks. But like, the Seahawks hit on all those draft picks, Schneider and Pete Carroll and Russell Wilson, and then they've fallen off over the past couple years because they've drafted poorly. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really at the crux of this. You know what I'm saying?
Dio, you got a great point. And look, man, like, you know, we talked about this, and I said if Giants ownership don't change the way they do business, we'll be here again in 2 or 3 years. They have the disappointment I have in ownership in Mara is the fact that you have a certain idea about how football is supposed to look or how your front office is supposed to look, and bringing guys in because they recommend it or they coach for a particular coach. We all have had this conversation about the Belichick tree. Y'all better stop trying that. It ain't working for a lot of them. You better go and do your due diligence. Here's the first thing I would do. Let me help Mara out. The first thing I would do is pick up the phone and call Ozzie Newsome, not to be my general manager, to consult me on what a good general manager looks like. Mm. Because the Baltimore Ravens still reaping the benefits of Ozzie Newsome drafts from years ago. The second thing I would do is I would look across the league and I would poll coaches like Andy Reid. I would poll coaches like a Shanahan.
I would poll coaches like
a Sean McVay. I would poll guys that have had a tremendous amount of success offensively and say, what are some things that you implemented? Yeah. And what is the rapport that you have with your general manager that allows you guys to have success, to be on the same page? And that doesn't guarantee you 100% of success. But if you keep operating in this phone booth and you think that your general knowledge is going to change the New York Giants franchise and organization, we'll be back here talking about this again, because everybody scratched their head when Joe Judge was hired, and everybody was trying to figure out what the hell is Dave Gettleman doing. So those are a couple things, John Mara, that you can do in order to press this forward. I'll send you my address for my check. You're welcome.
Charlie, real quick, because I know we got a bump. I also think it's you start over. There is no Daniel Jones or Saquon.
I was
going to
say, Marcus,
future.
You think a new quarterback is also in the equation? Yeah. Okay, so the trifecta,
no
it
question.
Is. They definitely need to put an end to the series of bad decisions they've been making for the course of the past, gosh, 5+ years at this point.
Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. We all know breakfast is part of your day, but sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any, and you know what happens. You grab a cup of coffee, you skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, even waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Come on. Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Okay, the Colts ended the season in ugly fashion, and since owner Jim Irsay has released this statement saying, quote, "This was a rough way to end the year, but this bad taste will fuel and motivate us even more for next season. I promise you, there are some exciting days to come." And with that loss, a lot of people are pointing their fingers at the quarterback, Carson Wentz. So
Dan, I know this is tough for That's both of us, but person. We really do need to address the situation at hand. Do you think that Carson Wentz is the quarterback of the Colts' future?
Yeah, absolutely. Carson Wentz proved to be a top 15 quarterback again this year. He played good football. They needed him to be great that last game, the last two games, and he wasn't great in those situations. But the Colts, he threw for 27 touchdowns and 7 interceptions. It's the fourth time he's had that type of season in 5 years in the NFL. So if the Colts want to go try and chase down a great quarterback or a guy they believe is great, absolutely, they could go do that. But if they're content on having a guy that's good and consistently year after year going to be a good player, Carson Wentz is their future.
Interesting. Okay, so good Charlie. Would be satisfactory. Okay. Marcus, what do you say to that?
I'm trying not to have a fight with my brother. I don't want to get this. We don't have a large amount of
no,
time.
I'm scared
Listen,
of you.
Quarterbacks don't grow on trees. They ain't walking all over the street. But I think I took a lot. It was so loud that Frank Reich was noncommittal on this. And it was so loud to me that Jim Irsay felt like he needed to come out and make a statement about where this team was. I told everybody before the season, Frank Reich is under immense amount of pressure because last year they were in the playoffs with Phillip Rivers. And they were a couple passes away from advancing to the next round. And I get it. Every year is not the same. Every team is not the same. But the expectations were for this team to be playing in the postseason. Mm-hmm. And they are going to have to come to a realization. This is what they're going to have to come to. Do we have a guy that, to your point, we will just be good with and okay? Because let me remind you all, this is the same franchise that fought to get over the hump while they had a Hall of Fame quarterback because the New England Patriots kept ripping them out of the playoffs. And then they couldn't get to the point where they needed to get to, and they kept making adjustments. So I know that's a part of Jim Irsay's thinking as far as where this team needs to be. He looks at it. He says, I have a great offensive line. I got a running back that's elite, that's probably going to be a Hall of Fame if he continues on this trajectory. I do need to get better at the wide receiver spot, but I like Pittman. I like Pascal. I like Mo Alie-Cox. I like the guys that I have at those positions. But can you upgrade them? Yes, but I don't think that's they chop liver. I think that's a squad you can win with based on the offense that you play. You got a generational player at linebacker in Darius Leonard. So all things point to the Indianapolis coach, like Dan said, because I want to remind my brother that he said Carson Wentz would be in the MVP conversation before this season started this year. Obviously, we know that that didn't take hold. So now you're looking at a team that's saying things just like the Los Angeles Rams are saying. So do we need to try to go out and get a Matthew Stafford type guy, or do we need to check on Russell Wilson to see if he's genuinely happy, or does he want to move? No, they ain't committed to Carson Wentz in the future.
That's not
they
the question.
They are going to exhaust everything.
Let me remind you.
No, he shouldn't be the future.
Let me remind you that his last name is Irsay, not Irsay. Like you reminded me that I would say Carson Wentz would be in the MVP conversation.
I wasn't
But here's
say
my
it.
Thing. So they don't have a first-round pick next year. That was traded for Carson Wentz. So you think that the best interest of the Colts is to move on from a quarterback that's a good player. Do you think he's a good player? Let me ask you that. You think he's good?
I think he's solid.
That's so corny. So you think that they should move on
TV
from a good quarterback?
I was just on TV, Dan, having a hard time trying to figure out who I want out of Baker Mayfield and Carson Wentz. I think both of them solid. They ain't good to me.
So you think that having a really good roster to move on from a good quarterback that's not going to cost you a lot of money is a better option? Or that's the best option in regards to, like,
he might not cost you a lot of money, but he's going to cost you a chance to win the Super Bowl. I think that's the plan for them.
And the Colts have the seventh most cap space coming into this next season. But also, I just want to say one thing. Andrew Luck being on the sidelines of the national championship on Monday. Ooh, man, that brought back some memories.
Because you think there's only quarterbacks that are great or suck. There's nowhere in between.
No.
They can't just be good players.
That's in between. Solid. You're okay.
I don't think that. I think the situation calls for you to determine what type of quarterback you need. If I
got
to
do that for every quarterback.
I can win a. If
you
I got a roster
all of them,
that I feel like I can win a Super Bowl with, then I'm gonna try to go
I'm
out
not
and get
sure,
a better
I'm not
quarterback
sure Carson Wentz is that guy.
Probably gonna hold me back.
Yeah, I don't think anyone thinks Carson
Stop,
Wentz is that
Dan,
guy for that
Dan,
matter. Okay, guys,
Dan,
we gotta keep it moving.
Fight.
We still have
it's
a little
Thursday.
More to get to.
First Take fans, listen up. Have you heard you can listen to episodes of this very show ad-free on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership? That's right. All your favorite First Take episodes can be heard on Amazon Music ad-free. But that's not all. You can listen to other top podcasts like The Low Post and PTI ad-free as well. They also have favorite shows like The Daily, Part of My Take, and Up First, all without ads. You know what this means? Uninterrupted listening, so no more cliffhangers. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts, so we know they definitely have something for you. And it's already included in your Prime membership. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app for free or go to Amazon.com/First Take. That's Amazon.com/First Take to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The Rams and Cardinals split their two regular season meetings this season, but let's talk about the quarterbacks. On one side, there's Matthew Stafford, who's looking for his first career playoff win in his 13th NFL season. And then there's Kyler Murray, who will be making his playoff debut. So, Marcus, who would you rather have here, Stafford or Kyler?
Oh, my God, Kyler. And listen, this is really based on the I know, right? Because I'm not convinced about either one. I think both of them are really good quarterbacks, but I ain't convinced about one turning a damn football over, the other one you don't know what you're going to get. But I'm going to go with Kyler because Kyler has the ability to get himself out of trouble. And we've seen him make these dynamic plays. We've seen him extend plays. We've seen Kyler Murray actually take over games being an athlete. And I guess in the playoffs, if the Arizona Cardinals get in adverse situations, I have more faith in Kyler being able to get himself out of it than Matthew Stafford. Matthew Stafford has the better weapons. He has the better team. But Kyler Murray, to me, in this particular situation with what they're going to have to face against the Los Angeles Rams, who they did not have a good showing against, will lean into his legs, his athletic ability, and in turn maybe create some downfield plays and explosive plays. So I'm going with Kyler Murray because Matthew Stafford got 9 picks over the last 4 weeks.
Dude, you just say things to be opposite of me, like just to try to hate on me.
More fun that way.
Yes, you do. There's no way. There's no stinking way that you are taking Kyler Murray in his first playoff appearance and in his third year in the league over a guy that is as good and as talented as Matthew. I'm not going to say, you don't talk about Bruno. No, no, we're not talking about
you don't
about
have to
it,
believe
Marcus.
It. I'm not, you don't. Not, this is not. Not this is not about me
it.
Making
you, don't
you
believe it.
It. This
you
is
want
about
me to pay
I,
you your
this
money
is so good.
And you don't believe it. There's no shot.
Okay, well, you both are on opposite sides of the fence on this one. But one thing I can say, you both were solid today. Solid. No, I'm just kidding. You were great. Okay, guys, thanks for joining us. We'll see you later.
Have you ridden an electric e-bike yet? You need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to spend more time exploring outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range or up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus! Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome, so you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting electricebikes.com. That's LECTRIC ebikes.com.